Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Dr. Chagpar welcomes Frank Terrazano, who wrote a book about his daughter Lauren's experience with lung cancer. Here's Anish Chagpar.
Tell us a little bit about your daughter and the inspiration for this book.
Lauren was a journalist for 14 years in New York. She worked for Newsday, and she was just a terrific reporter. She was very altruistic. Her writing, she wrote primarily about social problems, abused children, the elderly, the homeless, and so forth, and really had a genuine interest in trying to make things better for people who supposedly fell through the cracks in our society. And she was diagnosed in 2004 with lung cancer. And for the last 7 or 8 months of her life, she wrote a column, Life with Cancer. And the column was very, very well received by people in the New York area on Long Island. And also she was getting many, many cards and letters and well wishes from across the country, because Newsday was syndicating the columns at other newspapers across the country. And she received even cards from Scotland and from England, because people were reading it online. As I said, she was a great kid, a terrific reporter, and she always wanted to write a book. And apparently, obviously, she never got the opportunity to do so. So this is my gift to her, so to speak. And hopefully I fulfilled her wish, you know. And
yeah. Well, you know, it's certainly a great book. It's called Life with Cancer, the Lauren Terrazano story. Tell us, Frank, a little bit more about your daughter and when she was diagnosed and what that was like for her and also for your family.
Well, obviously, to her mom and I, she was our only child, and it was devastating to us. You know, Lauren always maintained... It hurt her deeply also. There's no question about it. She was scared. Obviously, anybody would be with a diagnosis like that. But she always tried to keep a good front, I guess, because she always tried to spare us from any hurt. And so she really faced the problem very courageously and had a very positive outlook on it, that we were going to get through this, Dad. That's what she always said to us. You know, we're going to get through this, you know. And
yeah. So how did it all start? How old was she? And okay. And how did she first end up presenting with lung cancer?
She was, first of all, she was 34 years old when she was diagnosed. There were no signs, I guess, other than the fact that she would come home and visit us on weekends. And sometimes she'd say, Dad, you know, I'm awfully tired. I'm just going to veg out. That was her famous line. You know, she was going to veg out for the weekend. But the last time she was home to visit, my wife had noticed that her right arm had a bit of a swelling in it, you know. And Lauren, just prior to that, had a visit, an annual visit with her doctor in New York. But anyway, my wife had mentioned that maybe you ought to have that checked into. You know, she couldn't understand what was going on there. Well, she went back, and she was also having. We found out later that she was having shortness of breath, you know, in addition. But she went back to New York, and she did consult with a doctor, and they did an MRI, and that's when they determined that she had tumors in her lung, her right lung. So the doctor that she met with was a thoracic surgeon at Sloan Kettering, and they immediately bonded. He was her age. He was an only child also, and they just hit it off, and her original diagnosis was at stage 3B, if I'm not mistaken, and that isn't always the best diagnosis, I guess. She he told her he would do whatever he could to try to get rid of the tumors and whatever. So they started a regimen of radiation and chemo for 3 months. this was in August, September, I think they first started. And then in December, just about 3 days prior to Christmas, they made the decision the radiation wasn't working as well as they thought it should as far as reducing the size of the tumors. And so they decided to go in and remove her right lung, which they did. And she made a remarkable recovery, you know, from that surgery. They took the lung out, and she seemed, it was followed up with additional radiation and chemo. And she seemed to maybe go into remission, or so we thought, you know. But she was in remission for a period of time. And like cancer, one errant cell, I guess, gets away, and it starts all over again elsewhere in the body, you know. So she went through a number of surgeries. She had developed a tumor which was non-malignant, but in her eye, they were able to remove that. And then there was another tumor where she got in her rib. And again, they had to remove part of the rib, and they rebuilt the rib with, we were told, plaster of Paris or something like that. So that's basically, then it finally came back with a vengeance, and she passed away in May of 2007.
So that's such a tragic story. Did Lauren have any warning signs? I mean, here she was. She was 34. She was an accomplished author. You know, did she have any clue? Was she a chain smoker?
You know, she smoked a bit in college. Okay, she and that was about the extent of it. Doctors even considered her a non-smoker, you know, for the length of time that she did try the habit, I guess. So other than the fact that I remember her saying that afterwards that she used to be tired all the time, you know, but she worked very hard. She was a very devoted journalist. I mean, there were times we'd contact her, try to reach her at home, and she wasn't there. We call the newspaper at 11 o'clock at night, and she'd still be there working on her story, you know. Yeah. She was very devoted to her work. And so apparently that was maybe the onset of it. We really don't know for certain, other than the fact that the swelling in her arm that her mother detected, I guess there were blood vessels that were being restricted, and that's what caused the swelling in the arm, you know.
Yeah. So I guess that's, you know, just the heads up to people listening that, you know, cancer can start at any age. And sometimes there aren't any risk factors, and it still happens, and you need to be vigilant. And
yes.
So it was a good thing that your wife picked that up. One can only...
The irony is that Ginny had picked it up, and Lauren had gone back to New York, and we didn't find out that she had cancer. She was diagnosed in August, and she just couldn't bring herself to tell us, you know. And it wasn't until September that we found out, September 4th. I'll never forget that day. She decided to drive up, and that's when she gave us the news.
How did that make you feel?
Devastated. I mean, I smoked. I was a smoker for 30 years, a heavy smoker myself, and I just couldn't understand how this could happen to my daughter. You know, I mean, she was a health nut. I mean, she's jogged Central Park. She was always, you know, very active in that respect. Went to health club and so forth. And I just couldn't understand that we couldn't, you know, comprehend that would happen to her.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times people struggle with how to tell family and friends and loved ones about a diagnosis as devastating as cancer, in part because it's devastating to them, but in part because they know how devastating it's going to be to their family.
Exactly.
What advice would you give to people who are struggling with that?
You know, we try to support, obviously, you know, give her as much positive support. I'll never forget an instance where when she first was getting her treatments, and this was just before her surgery, her mother and I had gone to New York. We made frequent trips down there, you know, to be with her and cook for her and while she was going through this. And one evening, she had a small apartment at the time, and we were staying there. And she couldn't sleep because she was vomiting from the effects of the chemo. And so she got up, and I was sleeping on the couch, but actually in her living room. And I told her to come out. I says, just come out here and sit with me, you know. And I put a pillow on my lap and I lie down. And she said, Daddy, she said, am I going to be okay? And I assured her she was going to be okay, you know. And to this day, that statement haunts me because all the years that, you know, she was a child. I mean, when she was in college, moving her from one apartment to another, we were always, whatever she asked, you know, we were able to do. And we doted on her. There's no question about it, you know. But I couldn't help her with this, you know. And that really bothers me to no end right now.
Yeah. But you did do something for her. You know, you were there for her and you supported her.
Yes.
Through what was a trying time for her. And many patients need that reassurance that everything is going to be as okay as it can,
as it can possibly be. Yeah.
So it is difficult. Tell us about how, you know, oftentimes the responsibility for making things better rests in part on the care team, the doctors, the nurses, but in part on the families. How did you interact with her care team, or did you?
Oh, yes, we did. Dr. Flores, who was the surgeon at Sloan Kettering, and we all hit it off with him. He was just a very supportive, very positive outlook, and we believed, you know, very highly in whatever he decided to do, you know, and she did too. Lauren really respected him, and as I say, they became friends, you know, which is something that normally doesn't happen, you know, but I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, so it really is. It really is a team environment.
Yes.
Oftentimes, that not only do you have a team of doctors and nurses who are looking after you, you have your team of support people, mm-hmm. your family, your friends. And those teams all come together to really support you through that diagnosis. Tell us a little bit about were there other resources that Lauren turned to, community support, faith-based organizations? How did you, as her family, who clearly needed some support as you were going through this as well, and how did she kind of get through that whole experience that I'm certain was so very trying for you?
She being the reporter that she is, I mean, she maintained a notebook. When I say the notebook was like 3 inches thick, okay, and she documented everything she could possibly learn about lung cancer and about her treatments. And I, in turn, being somewhat like her, I did a lot of investigating myself. As a matter of fact, I even convinced her to try to get some second opinion. We had heard about proton beam therapy, and that was available at MD Anderson Center in Texas. So I convinced her to fly down there with me to get another opinion. But that would have involved, we went down, her and I anyway, that would have involved, I guess they requested that you'd have to move down there temporarily and again, there was no guarantee that this proton beam therapy was going to do the job. So she chose not to follow up in that aspect and chose to take her chances up here in New York and with the doctor and the hospital that she was dealing with.
Yeah. And so I'd like to, after our break, talk a little bit about other resources that she may have tried, clinical trials, and how you and your family really got through this diagnosis of lung cancer, and then talk a little bit more about the book. So we are going to take a short break for a medical minute, but please stay tuned to learn more information about Frank and his daughter Lauren's experience with lung cancer.
The American Cancer Society estimates that the lifetime risk of developing colorectal cancer is about 1 in 20, and that risk is slightly lower in women than in men. Early detection is the key. When detected early, colorectal cancer is easily treated and highly curable. Men and women over the age of 50 should have regular colonoscopies to screen for this disease. Each day, more patients are surviving the disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving colorectal cancer survivors more hope than they ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for colorectal cancer. New options include a Chinese herbal medicine being used in combination with chemotherapy to reduce side effects of treatment and help cancer drugs work more effectively. This has been a Medical Minute, and more information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined today by our guest, Frank Terrazano. We're discussing Frank's daughter's experience with lung cancer. Frank's daughter, Lauren, was the inspiration for his new book, Life with Cancer. So, Frank, before the break, we were talking a little bit about your journey with your daughter to look for new therapies as you were faced with this unsuspected diagnosis of lung cancer. Tell us a little bit about what other modalities you looked at. Did you consider experimental therapies, alternative therapies, clinical trials? Tell us about what you did.
Well, there were many alternatives that I thought of that I would have liked to have pursued, but Lauren felt very comfortable, with her doctors in New York. I may have indicated about the trip to MD Anderson earlier. She was reluctant to go there, but I, convinced her that we've got to do something to see what else is available. And we did go down, but apparently it wasn't something that she was ready to go along with. The only other thing, one of the other things I should say that I remember them, there was research being done at the University of Alberta up in Canada, and they had come up with I can't think of the name. I'm sorry. It was a compound that every day is in everyday use, and they claimed that it had substantial, very very good results, I guess, with treatment of cancer cells and killing cancer cells without harming the existing cells, the healthy cells. And I looked into that, but again, it was in the experimental stage, and there was nothing that they hadn't even started clinical trials on it. There were a number of things like that, but they just didn't pan out.
Yeah. And so at the break, we were talking a little bit about your daughter's column, Life with Cancer. Tell us about her philosophy about the difference between living her life and allowing cancer to live it for her.
Lauren was very strong about that. That's the one thing that gave us hope, because she had that attitude, that positive attitude, that she was going to beat this. And she said, "Dad, we always said that, Dad, we're going to beat this together. We're going to beat this here." And she titled her column "Life with Cancer" again, because life meant more to her, okay, than the cancer she was fighting. It was an important part of her life, but she was vowed that she was going to live her life, however long it was going to be, and that cancer was going to be a secondary part in her life.
And how did she do that? I mean, one of the things that's evident is that even while she was being treated for her cancer, she continued to maintain her column. Tell us about how she really kept in control of her life, because for so many patients, when they're diagnosed with cancer, they feel like their life is going to spin out of control. And it sounds like your daughter really took the reins on this and said, "I'm going to live my life. It's my life. It's not cancer's."
Absolutely. She wrote those columns with a passion. The research that she did, the statistics that she I was just amazed at some of the statistics that she came up with that I myself didn't know about lung cancer. The fact that I think lung cancer kills more women than breast, uterine, and vaginal cancer. It just blew me away. I didn't realize that the numbers were that high, and the fact that the disease did not get much recognition. Now lately, it's starting to get some recognition, and the research dollars are being spent on it. Now it's the public is starting to see, that lung cancer is a very very serious problem, and also the stigma of smoking is not necessarily the cause of lung cancer. So she did a lot to probably enlighten the public about lung cancer itself, and she attacked those columns no different than she attacked when she was out doing a story. She was a stickler for detail and would not just accept status quo. She went after things and really made sure that she had all the information and presented that information, whatever she wrote.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's so important to have people who have a voice, who have a voice and give that voice to causes that they believe in. And I think that, you know, your daughter, although her story is tragic, really did lend a voice to the cause of the fact that lung cancer is the leading malignancy, the leading cause of cancer-related death, both for men and women, and that for many, it is not entirely related to smoking, and it can hit at any age, things that many people don't know, and really to push researchers to finding a cure for these diseases.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit more about your endeavor. Certainly, Lauren wrote a column frequently. Tell us about your book. Was this your first book? And what really gave you the inspiration, aside from, you know, really memorializing Lauren's story?
Well, as I started this in December of 2010, and not having any training in writing, or this is my first attempt at writing, and not having any training whatsoever, I just wanted to. Lauren had always told me that Dad, I'll go back even further. When she first started her career in journalism, she said, "Dad, someday I'm going to win a Pulitzer." Well, she didn't actually. Herself. I mean, she got there. She shared a Pulitzer Prize, you know, for the flight TWA disaster that happened in Long Island. But she also used to say, "Daddy, someday I'm going to write a book." Well, she never got the opportunity to do that. But so I decided that I was going to do it for her, and that was my this book is my attempt to write that book about her and for her, and to let people know just what type of a person she really was, what a caring individual she really was, a warm and caring individual. She used to refer to us as Mr. and Mrs. Helicopter, because for 39 years of her life, we hovered over. I mean, there's no question about it. She was our only child, and we basically were always hovering over. And she did the same for us. I mean, she was always the same exact way. I mean, she would worry about her mother or I if I sneezed or coughed the wrong way. You know, right away she'd panic. You know, it was just, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's our Italian heritage or whatever the case may be, that was the way it was, and this book was primarily not only to show her courage about fighting this disease, but also about the work that she did on behalf of others. You know, as I said earlier about the problems in society, she wrote about these problems and brought them brought them so that politicians and higher ups in society saw them and perhaps would go and make changes to benefit the people who were involved. So that was my biggest thing was to let people know that she was a social journalist and she really cared deeply about society's problems for the homeless and for the elderly and for the abused children and so forth and so on.
And she certainly did a lot for many of those causes. And so as a helicopter dad, how must it have felt when it must have felt so much like the TWA crash when the helicopter couldn't hover anymore?
Exactly.
That it spun out of control. Tell us about that, and tell us about how you regained some of that control.
I don't think I'll ever regain that control, to be honest with you. She is missed so dearly. There isn't a day or a night that I don't think about her. I can be looking at a picture and I just think of things, good things and that happen, and I get emotional. I just can't put into words, I mean, what this kid meant to us. You know, she was our whole life. She was the princess of our kingdom, you know, and I don't know what else to say. I really don't.
Well, and certainly the book is a tribute.
Absolutely.
To her and to your family and to the many great things that she had done. And certainly it is abundantly clear how close your family was. But what do you think you can now do to pay this forward even further. I think that the book is a great tribute to Lauren, but it seems to me that there's a bigger fight here. There's a bigger fight against lung cancer. Do you have plans to take that mission forward, and
well,
and if so, how?
The one thing I my wife and I have made a pledge to do, and it's in, I'm indicated in the book. When Lauren passed away, she was, as I say, she got her master's degree at the Columbia School of Journalism. So we established a scholarship in her name at Columbia, in 2007, and we've been able to issue, because of our support, we try to support as best we can each year, and also the support of her many friends and colleagues that she worked with. The fund has grown over time, and they've been able to grant scholarships to deserving journalism students the last 4 years. You know, not very much. I mean, $1,000, $1,500, but at least it's something that a journalism student, you know, can help to defray the cost of education for them. And secondly, whatever we my wife and I made this, that whatever is realized from this book, I share, let's put it that way, because I do have a co-writer here who, by the way, his name is Paul Lonato, and he co-wrote this book with me and helped me, basically, because being not having any experience, Paul kind of brought everything together for me and helped me to give me some structure and helped me to put this thing together so that we could actually put it into book form. Because I had pages of scribblings, if you know what I mean. But to get back to what I was saying, what we've hoped to do is whatever proceeds we realize from this, our share, we've committed ourselves to, there's two organizations, primarily the Lung Cancer Alliance and Jones Legacy Uniting Against Lung Cancer. It's an organization in New York that is also specifically works for the benefit of lung cancer and lung cancer patients. So we're giving back something, and by doing so, I think Lauren will still continue to help others, you know, and her name will remain in perpetuity long after my wife and I have left this earth. So
yeah, and it's such important work.
It is, absolutely.
I mean, I think that it's a tragedy that Lauren died so young. But it is a celebration that from that tragedy can come new research advances, new philanthropy that can really try to make a difference to this disease, that can help other Laurens down the line,
yes.
So that we can really start to make a difference to this disease. Tell us a little bit about support frameworks. I mean, it sounds like your family was so close-knit. You were each other's rock. But sometimes that structure shatters when things like this happen. Were there other people, other organizations that came
absolutely
to your rescue?
Absolutely. Other people. We had some, our friends, my wife and I, were very, very supportive with us all during Lauren's ordeal. But also there were five girls, five of Lauren's friends, colleagues in New York that I refer to them as her de facto siblings, because they were, whenever we were not able to be there in New York, these girls were just, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
They were just there for her. They would do whatever they could. They would accompany her to the chemotherapy or radiation treatments, or just the support that she got from those girls. And I mean, there were others also, but these five girls, you know, were just incredible. And as I say, I look upon them today as her sisters. There's no question about it in my mind.
Frank Terrazano is the author of Living with Cancer: The Story of His Daughter Lauren's Experience with Lung Cancer. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.